Authority meeting of February 21st, 2019. Commissioner Jones.
Present.
Commissioner Kearney.
Here.
Chairman Schiff.
Here.
Reading of the minutes.
I'll move to waive a reading of the minutes.
Second.
February 7th, 2019.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Approval of the minutes.
I'll move to approve the minutes as recorded, the meeting of February 7th, 2019.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Reports. Secretary's report. Commissioners, you have before you a memo from myself and discussions with Chairman Shad. He's requesting that we revise the meeting schedule. The meeting of March 21st, 2019 being rescheduled to Tuesday, March 26th, 2019. April 4th, 2019 meeting has been canceled, and we will resume the calendar with a meeting on April the 18th. Open government best practices.
That's going to work for the commissioners, okay. Mr. Kearney, that's good for you, too.
Absolutely.
Perfect. Thank you. I appreciate it.
You also have in your packet a memo that I believe came from the Buffalo Niagara Coalition of Open Government. There are six items on their requests. I wanted to have that in your packet so you could review them. And I think for the most part, we do a good job with these items. But
is this something that somebody wants us to post on our website or advertise that this is how we operate?
I think it was just informational.
I think these are suggestions as to how to comply with that group's definition of open meetings, which it's my understanding we comply with roughly 5.5 of the 6 suggestions. The only thing we don't comply with is that we do not post the financial disclosures of the commissioners and whoever files with us. My thought is they're available by FOIL through the county. They're available, our financial disclosures. Why wouldn't they be available by FOIL?
There's an exception because of the nature of what you're reporting. Some of it is, but it's pretty redacted.
Okay.
I think the one that we're developing that you still have to approve and give me your comments on, our in-house one, there really is nothing except you saying yes, yes, yes. And if you say no, then that would be something. But our in-house one would definitely be portable because it doesn't really reveal personal information so long as you attest that you're doing all of these things. And if you say no to something, then that would go to the IP and then be further information. So
as far as my disclosure of my finances, it does contain some client information, which I don't think is necessary to be out there, but short of that, I don't have any problem disclosing any conflicts that I've disclosed. But other than that, I don't see any real need to comply with putting our financials on the website.
Well, I think it's probably all discoverable through FOIL. If somebody wants to find out where you live, they can find out where you live without this.
But absolutely.
I would like some kind of redaction of at least that kind of personal information. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I can give you the research. You know, at the next governance committee, we're going to be looking at the financial disclosure. Why don't I do a memo to kind of brief this whole thing as what's FOIL-able? And you can look over our in-house form. You might want to consider just putting the in-house form without your home addresses on it and your home phone number.
It could go up under our files on the website, just like our old cards.
Yeah, honestly, Margaret, I don't even want you to spend time doing that.
Okay.
It's something which, we've adopted 95% of what they want. Mm-hmm. If it becomes an issue, we'll deal with it down the road.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but that's 1 out of 3 at the moment. I'm in favor of more disclosure than less with the appropriate redaction. I've foiled accounting forms myself before on people, and you get into redactions under the stuff that's statutorily provided for, but that's it. Everything else comes up, and the new form we have, I think, is pretty consistent in terms of reaching the information without disclosing personal information. So if somebody could look at that to avoid the personal disclosure problem that would be otherwise protected, I'd be in favor of something with the redacted. But I think that's for further discussion. Mm-hmm. And this is an interesting form, but whoever did it forgot that we are in a school system. And so, I mean, it's a nice idea to get from someone. But I would suggest we move on now.
Okay.
Number three, executive session. Discussion relating to the appointment of a person to the position of executive director pursuant to Public Officers Law Section 105(1)(f), matters relating to the appointment, employment, or promotion of a particular person, and to discuss with its attorney and legal obligation of the authority due to the resignation of John Mai, exempt under the open meetings law pursuant to Public Officers Law Section 108(3).
And I'd like to take up the executive session after we get done with the rest of the resolution.
So after item 17.
Correct.
Prior to the adjournment.
Correct. On legal now.
Legal. Service connection work orders. Murphy and Prendergast.
This is a simple thing. It's really left up to you. Actually, Sherry's the one who brought it to our attention. She asked a very simple question of Karen and I as to why is it the last thing when we do these service connection work orders? We give you work orders, but we don't really do resolutions. And she asked the question, why do we do that? So Karen and I started discussing it.
I was under the impression that it was a resolution and was surprised to find it wasn't. But in fact, it's just ratifying or approving work orders that we already have approved the work under contract with our small and large service contractors. This isn't the first time this has come up. I look back way, way back as far as I could in the minutes, and I can see that traditionally this has always been something that's been done, but it clearly, those work orders are governed by contracts,
and
so it's probably redundant to approve the work orders after you've already approved the work.
Right. So the tariff sets forth what are going to be the charges, and our small and large service contracts, which you approve, says who's going to do it. So, it's kind of, we talked about it,
Len and I won't
you cannot actually, at the end of the meeting, you always approve, motion approval, it's like ministerial, but you literally cannot say, well, I'm voting against it, because you've already passed the tariff.
Well, you can vote against it, just doesn't do anything.
Yeah, it's sort of like they're going to look at you, it's like, you can't do it, you approve the tariff and you approve the contract, so what's your reason? So, we bring it to your attention simply as, do you want this as an informational item that remains on the board, or do you want to just take it off as one item that you don't need when you have so many other things that we're trying to get you to decide on policy, where this is a ministerial act that really doesn't require any action by you. So we just put it there for whatever you want to do.
Mr. Lichtenthal, you got any comment on this?
I believe this is a vestige that goes back to the Western New York Water Company, when it was a division out of New York, and somehow it just got picked up when we became an authority. I think the reasoning for it has been lost to time, and I concur with the reasoning in the memo that was presented by our attorney and our controller. That
is there an actionable item on the agenda for this?
Just
it just won't appear.
Tell us that you guys agree, and we won't put it on anymore.
All right,
I agree. Take it off. The approval process is already done. There's no point in doing it in a redundant way that makes no sense.
Right. Agreed.
Agreed?
Agreed.
Okay. Very good.
Fiscal, January investment report, Robert Lichtenthal.
Commissioners, you have in your packet our investment report for January of 2019. We continue to monitor the market. We've gone a shade longer in some of our maturities. We did exceed budget by a small amount. That's just a a function of cash flow at this time of the year, a good function of cash flow, but all is steady.
Mr. Lichtenthal, I think this is similar to a question I had last month on this report, and I understand by your memo this report is mandated through one of our policies or procedures?
It is a policy that is adopted by the board.
Okay.
And is seen every year at the annual meeting regarding the investment policy.
Okay.
And that's a required policy under authority of budget office.
Statutory required policy.
Right. Public authority, yes.
The it's a question I had, and it's just trying to understand the numbers. And I think I had a similar question to what we had last month, and you cleared up for me. But I was wondering if on the report itself it could be self-explanatory, at least for my simple mind, of why there was a decrease of $1.7 million in cash on hand in deposits.
Sure.
To pay some bond off or what have you. And I think last month there was a combination of
debt service. Right, last
debt,
time.
Debt service that was added up on the second. Or
okay. Let me do this. I if there's any major movement, and I'll
Well, $1.7 million kind of caught my attention, when especially when it's labeled cash on hand as a decrease.
Yeah, one of the key things that would happen at this time, so that you understand, invoices, our capital spending is normally back-end loaded. So right now, if you see the January financial reports, you won't see a tremendous amount of capital dollars expended in January. Back-end loaded, October, November, December, bills are coming in from contractors and so on. So bills that would have come in at the end of December, even some of those that may have come in early January, would go against 2018 business, but that back-end loading of receiving those bills would have driven us to the point that our cash flow out in January is significantly larger than our cash flow in, giving you
is there something simple that can be done on this report?
I think I can take a look.
Just to show this that...
Yeah, let me take...
I wouldn't have to go back to the prior report to reconcile.
I'll tell you what, let me take a look. This is what I want to do, is I want to take a look. And we use a term many times, what's called material. What's a material movement number?
Yeah.
Because out of 1.2 million in this case, is it a bunch of $30,000, $50,000 transaction, or was there one $500,000 lump? And I'll try to see if I can see a material line to say that, out of that we had two big expenditures that would have driven the cash. Let me see if I can come up with that so that we can include this and incorporate that.
That'd be great.
Okay. Very good.
Monthly financial, January, Steve D'Amico.
Okay, commissioners, you should have a copy of the monthly financial report for January. Our revenues for the month were less than budget by $259,000. That's 4.1%. Our investment income for the month was greater than budget by $15,000, 17.2%. Our operating expense for the month was less than budget by $697,000, 15.2%, giving us a net income for the month of $629,000.
Thanks, Steve.
OPEB valuation, Karen Prendergast.
Every 2 years, we have a consultant who is actually provided by Labor Management Healthcare Fund to do evaluation on our other post-employment benefits. In 2007, GASB, the Government Accounting Standards Board, passed a resolution that any benefits that you're going to pay your employees in their retirement, they're actually earning them in their current years of employment, and so we need to start recording that liability. This was similar to what the private sector did under FAS 106 in the 90s. And so we started having these valuations done every other year. They are generally flat or as predicted, but in 2017, or for 2018, we have to adopt a new GASB 75, which has a significant impact on our financial statements. And so I wanted to present the report to you and go through a couple of the numbers, because you will see on our published financial statements, on the face of them, that we had some significant changes in our net position due to the implementation of this GASB.
this isn't unique to us.
No, this is everybody. I mean, and if you look at our liability with, you know, roughly 200 retirees and 250 employees, and you look at how significant our liability is, you can sort of get an idea of what places like Erie County or New York State or larger government agencies are having to deal with billions of dollars in liability compared to our millions.
So when the bond market sees that there's been a variation here,
they understand
that it's not going to affect our bond rating or anything?
No, it's actually every government agency has had to adopt this in 2018.
This is a question every time we speak with the bond rating agencies. They bring it up. They ask, what's your strategy for dealing with it? They can obviously see in our financial statements what the numbers are. And they understand it because, as Karen says, we're not unique. This is not a unique issue. It's basically, and I'm sure she'll get into it, it's driven by our census, and it's driven by the level of benefits that we've negotiated with our bargaining units and that we grant our non-represented employees.
So this sheet, which is in your packet, is a summary of many of the tables that are in that full report. If you read the executive summary of the full report, I'm sure that you'll find that informational. A lot of the tables in the back are actuarial tables, and they're there to just explain how they did their statistics. But these numbers are important, and so I just want to run through them quickly to give you an idea of the magnitude that we were just discussing. You know, last year on our financial statements, we had a $38 million liability, which was representative of the liability we incurred for both active and current retirees. This year, because of the implementation of GASB 75, we're no longer able to take our full liability and amortize it over a period of time. GASB has decided that we need to recognize the full liability now this year. So our actuarial liability at the end of, or at the very end of 17, is now $99,640,307, up from what we recorded last year of $38,800,000. So that is a significant change to our financial statements. You can see that the division between current retirees and active employees is roughly $45 million for retirees and $54 million for our active employees. And if $99 million isn't scary enough, the projected present value of all of our future liability is $138 million. So, I mean, these are really significant numbers. They're not cash for the most part. They represent a liability on our balance sheet. Unlike other municipalities, we're really, we're kind of lucky in the sense that we have, because of all the value of all of our infrastructure, we have a good, solid, a healthy net position, so we can absorb a $90 million liability without having too much of a negative impact on our net position.
I'm sorry. Has anybody analyzed how this compares to everybody else? I mean, is there a...
Well, because it relates to...
Is there an acceptable percentage of the fluctuations across the board for...
Well, to Mr. Lichtenthal's point, you know, this is based on the number of employees that you have and the value of the benefits that you offer. So, you know, Erie County is probably a good comparison because they have the same health insurance that we do. They provide health insurance to their employees. But there's a lot of factors, like how much do they contribute? That matters. You know, what type of, like, for example, we require our retirees who are over 65 to take Medicare, and we offer a supplemental plan. That helps us because it's a lower cost. So it's really an app. It's not a.
Well, I understand there'll be variances between the government. Does anybody have a range in mind?
Well, this is also a new GASB, so everybody is going through this for the very first time.
So we don't. We know if we're in an acceptable range.
Well, there's no acceptable range. It is what it is. I mean, the only control you have over this is modifying those benefits.
Let me ask this. I mean, it seems to me that the impact that it has, there's two. One is the immediate impact is, will it affect this in a negative way in the bond market?
No, because of the point that everybody is subject
to. That everybody's in it. So, I mean, if that's the case, then I think, you know, I'm comfortable with dealing with it. The other thing, though, is I think it only suggests that maybe going forward, you know, do we change something in our benefits packages going forward? That is not a current issue. That's
no, but and it's stuff. I mean, we always try to manage those costs.
We're subject to our union contracts anyway.
Exactly.
Yeah. So our time to try and quote unquote manage this is
right.
When we're negotiating with the unions in terms of contribution to health, pension, et cetera, et cetera. So I get it, and I fully agree with Ms. Pendergrast. It is what it is.
Yeah.
We're now contractually locked in for Terry. 3 years on each?
No. Five on the blue.
Yeah. So our numbers are pretty much locked in for the next 5 years. That will be our next opening to try and affect our future liability for pension, health.
Right. And we are doing
some of the
right things. I mean, you know, the Medicare issue is huge. But small changes do have an effect. For example, some of the things that we, in an effort to give the Brotherhood parity with our CSEA union, we backdated the year that they have to contribute in retirement. That was $166,000 in this OPEB. So, I mean, that gives you some gauge of what a very small change. And if I recall correctly, that change affected less than 5 members. It was a very small change, but it did have $166,000 impact on a $90 million liability. It's small, but still, you know, just to give you an idea.
But
so
since this is new, there's no comparison. There's no.
No. What you will see, though, on the face of our statement is a $60 million prior period adjustment, and that's really the whole purpose of this presentation is that. You understand that that's from the implementation of GASB 75, and it's something that we only control, to your point, through negotiations with our union and providing benefits to our employees.
And this is just a different way to report it.
It is.
And that's all it's come down to is it's it's always been there.
Yep.
Now it has to be reported, and I get it.
Exactly.
Okay.
But again, I wanted to draw your attention to it because when you see the financials, it's
going to be shocking. No, it's not going to scare us. We're big boys.
Okay. Thank you.
You speak for yourself.
Operations. Declaration of emergency, Robert Lichtenfeld.
Well, commissioners, you have in your packet, we had an issue on February 8th with brakes, so we just rolled with it to keep the crews going, and good thing we did, because the brakes keep coming. And I don't mean the brakes for dump trucks. I mean the line maintenance brakes.
Bob, on this one, I guess we have a policy problem here, don't we?
Yes.
Isn't that the issue, Karen? I mean, what's
they're working on
this. We just have to fix our policy. So
right.
Because this is just ordering supplies when we need them.
Well, our current policy provides that every purchase is approved by the board. And when you have a lead time of 2 weeks for board approval, there are some instances where we can't wait that long.
Right. Major breaks.
Right.
This was a 12-inch, I think.
So the new policy hopefully will address a process to fix that.
This was actually more an issue. It was brakes for a dump truck.
Right.
That were gone. And if you took that dump truck out of service for 2 to 3 weeks, it took one whole crew out of service for two to 3 weeks. While it's being repaired, and at the heavy leak time, that would not have been proven.
But there is an additional issue when I looked over. I talked to Karen about it. That this is not, even under our current policy, this is not the proper use of an emergency declaration. I don't know a lot about vehicles, you guys probably know more about, but I know brakes just don't fail. If we're proper maintenance, you would know that the brakes on a truck is failing, you're going to have to replace the rotors or the brakes or something like that. And so what's happening, from what I understand, is an emergency declaration is supposed to, our rule is if you're between $250 and $10,000, you got to get 3 quotes, report it to the board under item 2 on the agenda. But people, what they're doing is they're not having any foresight, they're not looking ahead as to what they have in their inventory, and then they declare an emergency because they don't have the parts that they should have been looking to have, and then coming to Karen and having her sign off on this stuff without board approval, which she can't do. So now they're doing an emergency declaration, which is not appropriate because it doesn't fall within what has been viewed as to, now this is an internal policy, so we can change it, but it doesn't fall into the definition that our current policy says is to an emergency declaration, because these things should have been, if they were carefully looking as to what their inventory was, what they had enough time to come to the board and put this as an item too, but they're leaving everything to the last minute, and then saying it's an exception to the procurement guidelines. No, it's not.
Well, we can fix the guidelines, but Bob, right. We gotta try
I mean, just,
to get the staff
just so,
to
just yeah. so we're clear, we do regular maintenance on all the vehicles. They
yes.
are serviced on a regular basis. You know, whether, and I'm not going to get into, because I'm not crawling underneath the dump truck, I'm not getting into whether or not the brake line went and was unforeseeable,
right.
whether or not there was, you know, it hit something and it was unforeseeable. You know, I think we have a more of a systemic problem in terms of this that we'll address at some point getting, you know, some way to deal with that. But I don't want the record here to reflect that our vehicles are not properly maintained. You know, let's just say that yes, brakes do go, yes, brake lines blow out, you know, you've got temperatures, you've got, you know, especially on a vehicle like this that's, you know, in use constantly and you know, it just can happen.
Some of these vehicles are running 24 hours a day, so
yes. Yeah. So I recognize that we had to get this thing fixed immediately.
If we would have followed the current procedure, they missed the deadline when this happened. This would have had to wait and go on a board meeting 2 weeks from today, and they could have ordered the parts on
yeah,
March
you'd
8th.
You'd have five right. people standing around.
Right.
Which is why we need to build in some
yes, we need to
different
build in
process.
Some process by which we need to keep these trucks running without board approval.
Right.
So I trust that everybody's got that in their sights, and we'll see something
awesome.
In a month.
Very bad weather, too. I don't know if this is weather related.
Well, and it could be pothole related, which
yeah,
is
well, that goes back
not our issue, but, you know, you're running these things, you hit something, that can jar a brake line loose as well. Okay, next.
RFP, storage tank inspections, Robert Lichtenfeld.
Commissioners, I'm going to defer on items 2 and 3 because Mr. Kowalski was able to join us today for the meeting, and he's intimately knowledgeable on these projects and, frankly, more qualified to speak on them than I would be. So.
Mr. Kowalski, such a pleasure to have you.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for inviting me. Actually, I should thank Margaret for getting me invited here. So. Every 5 years, the health department, per their regs, they want the water storage tanks inspected. So our prior round of inspections had recently ended. So now we have to go back out for an RFP to consulting firms and solicit RFPs from them for 15 tanks. So basically, between this year, the end of 2019, and to the end of 2021, there's basically 15 tanks that need to be inspected per the health department regulation.
And the people that we're hiring have to be approved by the health department?
Typically, what the in the RFP, the authority puts together the specs that we require for what the inspectors, what kind of quals they need to have and stuff like that. So they're typically all top-notch.
Perfect. Good.
All right, then on item 3, last year the DOT reached out to the authority to do a betterment project together on Route 5. So the authority put together an RFP, sent it out to consulting firms. We sent it out to 8 firms. 6 firms responded. The engineering staff sat together, went through all the proposals, shortlisted the top 3 who were considered the most qualified. A lot of that had to do with working with the DOT. And based out of those 3 firms, the engineering department is recommending we move forward with Cliff Harbor, and we're looking for approval to move forward with a professional service agreement with them for this project.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Human Resources, no report. Audit Committee, no report. Governance Committee, no report. Finance Committee, no report. Ethics Board, no report. Communication and bills. Item 1, creation and/or amendment of master purchase orders.
I'll move to accept item one.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, motion carried.
Item two, master purchase order releases, purchase orders, and purchase order amendments.
I'll move item two for approval.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, motion carried.
Item three, resignation of Jay Mai.
We'll receive and file. I think there's no further action needed.
Item four, foil L veto.
Again, receive and file. I guess council, legal's got that one covered.
Yeah.
Item five, foil J Doherty.
Again, receive and file. Legal has that.
I have a note here that we've already closed it out. We've already responded, so we got the request and we responded immediately. Or the secretary responded immediately.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much.
Item six, foil Bartz.
Receive and file.
Item seven, foil E Chung.
Again, receive and file. Legal has it.
Item eight, foil J Hall.
Again, receive and file. Legal's got it.
That action has been withdrawn.
Oh.
And we referred it over to claims, and I think we referred it over to engineering because there's recommendation that's being made here about some problems.
Is that the one on Long Meadow?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's the one on Long Meadow. So when
poor guy keeps getting breaks on front of his house.
Yeah, and he's basically asking. I've had Tony look into it on a claims thing because it was reported that it's in a direct service area. He just wants to know when we're going to replace the pipe because it's broken six times. So that's being referred to engineering to look at. And as far as the damage that was just done to his patio and everything, we referred it over to claims. I also spoke to him personally and told him to make sure that he called his own homeowner's carrier so that we don't control what we pay out, our carrier does, but he doesn't want to be in a situation that his own carrier said, you never told us about this. So we just told him to do it, and Tony's looking in, is taking care of it and looking into it, and he's given him the
form. If he's had six breaks, the line should be almost new by now.
I mean, it's just repairs.
Poor guy.
A lot of Band-Aids on it.
Yeah, a lot of Band-Aids. Yeah, so.
Okay, we got that in the record.
Okay.
Yeah.
He meant repair.
Len, that'll be something.
Yeah, he meant repair claims. So.
Yeah. Len, that would be something that we'd be looking to.
Yeah, eventually, once that makes its way to the engineering department, we'll take a look at that at that street and see if it's warranted for replacement.
Yeah, I've seen the crews out there because they have to drive by there.
Yeah.
Periodical. Thank you. Okay.
Item nine, retirement letter, J. McKelkey.
Again, receive and file, and I want to thank John for his services. Yes.
Persons addressing the authority.
All right. I look out there. Anyone who wishes to speak and address the authority may do so. Not seeing anyone wishing to do so, we'll move on to the next item.
Unfinished business. There is none. New business. Item 10. Resolution granting the State of New York authority to perform the adjustment for the owner and agreeing to maintain facilities adjusted by a state let contract.
I'll move item 10.
Second.
For approval.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed. Motion carried.
Item 11. Authorization to accept proposal of Waterford Pines Community LLC for the construction and installation of approximately 100 lineal feet of 8-inch DIP and 1,992 plus lineal feet of 8-inch PVS water main in Waterford Pines Phase 2, Town of Hamburg, New York, project number 200400497.
Move to approve item 11.
Second.
Any discussion?
Just for clarification, that should be PVC.
I would assume
not
so.
PBS.
PBS?
No.
There's a typo there.
The type of PVC is the type of pipe used.
Yeah.
I understand.
Let's get that.
All this has been approved, Len?
Yes.
those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 12, authorization to amend the Erie County Water Authority's annual O&M and capital budgets for fiscal year 2018.
I'll move to approve item 12.
Second.
Any discussion? I just have a question, Bob or Karen. I mean, this is probably the last of the adjustments before we close our books.
It's done for the closing. This is more a ratification, but it's a concept that we would not want to do that without informing the commissioners so that they see that.
Right, and we need to get it done for the audit. Okay. And those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 13, authorization to adopt amended Erie County Water Authority bylaws.
I'll move to approve item 13.
Second.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 14, authorization to solicit request for proposals for insurance brokerage services, project number 2019-00047.
Gentlemen, on this particular item, you have two options. Bob had sent a memo to you at a board meeting that I missed when I was sick, asking, do you want to extend Lawley services for 1 year? And I sent you a memo, a confidential memo, basically telling you, you certainly, because it's a, it is a, you know, it's an RFP and it has to do with insurance. And so, you know, there's not like if you didn't do what Bob recommended, extending for 1 year, it's not like you would be doing anything wrong. But my memo indicated that 3 years ago, we did an RFP. We had certain people, the cycle has ended, and you can do that. So in talking with the chair and with the secretary, we thought since we're like a week earlier than we were 3 years ago, we'd put this on here and you would decide. Either you would vote this up or down. If you voted down, then we can extend them for 1 year, or you can set it up for RFPs and then decide after you see the RFP what you want to do. So it's basically you have two options here. We thought the board should make that decision, not us.
Well, number one, do we have the time to do it?
Yeah, the 3 years ago, it went out on February 28th, and that's what started this cycle. This is going to be going out tomorrow, so we're actually 1 week earlier.
Well, 3 years ago, do we have everything going on here that's going on here now? We've got a lot of changes in the midst and all that. I mean, is it just adding to the workload of
Tony, I mean, my general preference is to go to bid if we can, but I do recall the last time around, we were scrambling at the end. And even though we would be a week earlier, and I'm inclined to think with some of the other things, so I would like to see us get done as a board in terms of spending time on, like, procurement and some of these other policies. But, Tony,
No matter what we do, there's a scramble at the end.
Yeah.
Whether we're out to bid, not out to bid, there's just things that come up at the last minute or along the way they have other questions, and there's always something to scramble.
And Anthony, just so I'm clear, what we're talking about is RFPing the insurance agency that would then put us out to bid. I mean, basically, that's what Lawley is doing now. Correct. They're acting as a broker. They broker us out to insurance companies, depending upon our needs, you know, liability to one, comp to one, et cetera, getting us the you know, what has been indicated as the best deal in each department. So we're looking at whether or not we're going to continue to allow Lawley to do that for another year, or are we going to, you know, see if there's a better agency out there to broker us. Correct?
Yes.
Okay. And I mean, look, you've been the contact person with these insurance companies for the past however many years.
22.
I mean, we've certainly been well-serviced with Lawley. They were extraordinarily helpful with our main break.
Yes, they were.
And it would appear that our insurance from 2017 to 2018... we saw a reduction in costs,
right,
because they did broker us and actively go out and seek the lowest bids from multiple contractors.
Right.
Okay.
I agree with the chairman that I think we have other priorities at this time, so I'll move to deny.
Well, do we have a motion? We already have a motion, right?
There's no second, it just fails.
With no second.
There's no second.
Okay.
All right, it'll fail. And we'll stick with Law Lane. We'll have to do that in another resolution to extend, right?
Why don't we do a separate resolution at the next meeting?
Yes.
Designating them as the broker of record for the 2019-20 program.
We don't have a, for some reason, I don't know how that works. We may want to do a professional service agreement with them, and we'll have that on the next board.
All right, that'll work. Yeah, let's do that. Thank you.
Item 15. Item 15, adoption of policy number 92 relating to employment opportunity posting and hiring.
I'll move to accept, adopt item 15.
Second?
Second, but we need amendments.
I'll move to adopt item 15 as amended in the governance meeting earlier this morning.
Which includes?
Which includes going from divisions.
From units to divisions.
Changing the phraseology of units to divisions.
And?
And rescinding all prior policies.
Relating to this.
Relating to this hiring process. Okay. With that motion, is there a second? Any further discussion?
No.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 16, authorization for Stephen Denzler, distribution engineer, to attend the American Water Works Association, New York Section 2019, New York Water Event Conference in Sarasota Springs, New York.
Move to approve item 16.
Second.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Motion carried. Opposed? Motion carried.
Item 17, service connection work order lists.
Move to approve item 17.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Now, at this time, I'd move that we go into executive session for discussion relating to the appointment of a person to a position of the executive director pursuant to public officers law, section 105, subdivision 1F, matters relating to the appointment, employment, or promotion of a particular person, and to discuss with its legal counsel the legal obligation of the authority due to the resignation of John Mai, exempt under the open meetings law pursuant to public officers law, section 108.3. And I'd like Secretary McCracken, Ms. Murphy, I think Ms. Prendergast, and Mr. Lichtenthal to stay for a minute, and then I'd have a separate matter I want to address in which I'm going to excuse everybody except for Mr. Lichtenthal right at the end for one item. As a part of this.
But it is 11:07.
It's 11:07. Those in favor of going to executive session, say aye. Okay, motion, no opposition, motion carried. We're in executive session now.
Oh, yeah.
This
yeah.
is official.
Yeah, don't worry about that, because this is a backup.
That's a backup, just in case this goes.
All right, it's now 11:35. We're back out of executive. Do we have to have a motion for that?
Yes.
I move that we leave executive session having discussed the matters for which we went into it and concluded, frankly, that there is no further action required by us. Is there a second to come out of executive
session? I'll second. Session?
Okay. And to make it clear, we've had the discussion. We've concluded no further action is required. And with that...
Wait, we're not plugged in here.
No, we're okay. We're okay. It's covered. It's got okay. It's covered. All those in favor of coming, or we're out of exec. We took the vote.
Right.
Sorry.
No, you didn't vote yet.
Hmm?
He seconded it.
You didn't. He seconded.
We never voted on coming out of exec.
Those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carried. Thank you. We'll keep you around. Okay. All right. Now we can entertain a motion to adjourn.
Just state the time we came out.
We came out at 11:35. That's what
I
said.
I got that clock.
Okay. Motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Motion carries. Thank you.
11:35.
I want to thank you guys because Karen just gave me good financial advice.